All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to Oilers Nation Radio, presented by The Nation Network. Subscribe for free on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, Oilers Nation Radio, episode 106. I am Bagged Milk. I'm here with Tyler Yaremchuk, Rick, and Nation Dan. We are going to break down everything you need to know about the Edmonton Oilers and life in general. First, I want to thank our friends at Sherwood Ford the Giant for making it possible out in Sherwood Park, Alberta. Follow them on Twitter at Sherwood Ford, on Instagram at Sherwood Ford underscore the Giant. Now is the time to winterize your vehicle. If you need new tires, if you need some service, if you need an oil change, whatever, maybe just a new whip entirely heading into the winter, go check out our friends at Sherwood Ford. They are in Sherwood Park. They would be happy to help you with whatever your vehicle needs are. And as we always do with the podcast, my friend Tyler Yaremchuk is going to take it away with this week's Sherwood Ford Giant Question of the Week.
Thank you, Mr. Bag Milk. Happy to be here again on a lovely Friday. This week's Sherwood Ford Giant Question of the Week is centered around, I think he's been the man the last couple days here. Everyone wants to talk about the Nuge and what his next extension could look like. Yes, Bag Milk rocking his Keep Nuge Forever shirt. It's beautiful, and you look beautiful in it. The question this week, what is the most you would pay Ryan Nugent-Hopkins per year on a long-term deal?
Whatever he wants. The rest of the cap. Give him it all. Makes sense, right?
Fair enough.
No, but seriously, it's going to be a really interesting one for the Oilers and for Nuge as well, because I don't know if you know this, Tyler, but things are kind of fucked up in the world right now, and that means a flat salary cap for the NHL, which makes an extension on a guy like Nuge a little trickier than it was probably 6 months ago. Over at The Nation yesterday, Gregor wrote an article kind of looking at some of the comparables of what people signed for when they had similar to stats to Nuge, and significantly higher probably than what some people would be willing to pay him. That said, I think, for a real answer, if you could get something with a six in front of it, that you'd probably be doing okay. Would he look at maybe doing something like a William Nylander, the 6'9" nice contract for over 8 years? Maybe. I don't know. Is that too high? Gregor's looking at 6'5". Brownlee's got an article saying 6'25". Because of circumstances, obviously, you merit probably a bigger raise than that in normal times, but these are not normal times. But gentlemen, what say you? Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, new deal.
I'm going to go ahead and say I'm okay if he's in the 7 range. And I wouldn't go any, like, my outer marker, I think, is 7.25. Because I think Nugent-Hopkins is going to come to the table here and ask for 7.5. I could see the Oilers throwing out some comparables and say, listen, we think you're closer to the 6.5 range. I think they could meet at $7 million.
And because he's Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, and I think he's an important part of this team, and he's not a guy you want to let go, I think I'm okay going up to the $7.25 million on a long-term deal. Listen, this guy kills penalties, contributes on the power play, is easily a point-a-game winger, and can play center if one of your big two goes down with an injury, which could certainly always happen. So I think you don't let this guy walk, and he's not even the guy I'd really play hardball with. You get this deal done. I think I'm comfortable with paying him. 7.25 is the outer marker. I'd be comfortable at 7. I'd love it anywhere in the sixes.
Rick, what do you think? Huge. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, you get something in the six, I think you walk away with a big win there. But like Tyler said, I was having this conversation earlier today, and I think I said 7.25 is about the most I'm going to go. And I honestly don't see him really shooting for much more than that anyways. And because, you know, if your ceiling is that close, I think we'll be able to get underneath it somewhere. So the same thing here. Top end is 7.25. I mean, maybe he can talk me into 7.5, but right around there is the most he can go. But anything with a 6, yeah, you're walking away with a huge win there.
I think you're smiling, and I think that Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is going to make us smile with a 6.5 kind of deal. I think we can all kind of agree that he's like that guy that just puts the team first on a lot of things. I think he sees that Connor McDavid left money on the table. Leon Draisaitl obviously left money on the table. Like the core guys in this group are here to play and win. And Nuge is just happy to be an Edmonton Oiler, which he should be, and we're happy he is too.
The one thing I'll say, it helps the Oilers that they can offer him that 8th year, I think. And that's where an AAV in the 6 is maybe more possible, because if Nuge were to go to market, teams can only offer him $7 million a season. You got to remember, he's 27 years old. This is going to be the last big contract he signs in his career. So 7x7 is $49 million. If you're doing an 8-year deal and Nuge wants to make $49 million, then that AAV is down at 6.1. So if the Oilers were to go to him at 8 years times 6.5, that is substantially more money, or not substantially, but it is more money than he'd get from any other team, right?
I'm definitely on board for 8 years, by the way.
Me too.
Yep.
That's exactly where you want to go. You want to lock this guy up for the rest of it, you know, for pretty much the rest of his career.
Especially,
I don't see his body breaking down or his game breaking down the way, you know, the bigger bodies do, like the Luches or whatever the world. I think he can play this type of pace for many, many years to come. So I have no fear of taking him at 35.
Yeah, and like with any free agent deal, because he is a UFA, you're worried about the back end of it. But I think Nugent Hopkins is the kind of guy, like, look at Minnesota with Mikko Koivu. Not that they're nearly the same type of player in terms of defensively and all that, but I still think Nugent Hopkins is a guy who, when he's 33, 34, 35, can be maybe like a Patrick Marleau type. He does it all, both ends of the rink. You can throw him out in any sort of situation. He's not going to make mistakes, and he's still going to score you. You know, maybe he's not quite over a point per game, but he'll still be in that range. And for the last 3 years of a big contract, I think you'd be okay with that. So I'm absolutely, if it's getting the AAV lower, 100% going 8 years with the Nuge.
Here's the thing about signing Nuge or not signing Nuge. If they don't sign Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, then they're forever looking for a player who plays like Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. Is there a winger out there available that'll be comparable money that's better than Nuge? I don't think so. Is there one that'll be better than Nuge that can also play center, like Tyler said, if need be? I just don't see it. So I would love Ryan Nugent-Hopkins to be the first Oiler to sign a deal that takes him from draft to retirement. I think that he's the kind of player that they need. He's a wonderful complementary piece to Connor and Leon. He does a lot of heavy lifting in terms of defensive work, and I think he's earned it. Also, again, this is a guy who's been here since 2011, and if you're new to Oilers fandom, congratulations, you missed a lot of horrible years, and Nuge saw all of them. Yeah. Nuge saw all of them, made no complaints ever, and always wanted to be here. So I don't think that that is a player that you should just discard easily, especially given how talented he is.
And you mentioned who else on the market, if you let him go, could you sign? Here are the pending UFA wingers that are on the market next season when Nuge would also be a UFA. Ovechkin's up there. Okay, well, that's whatever.
Bring him in!
Brandon Saad is another one. Brandon Saad's not as good as Nugent Hopkins.
Nope.
Alex Steen is 37 years old. Not happening. Gabriel Landeskog, same age as Nugent Hopkins. I think Landeskog, like, even him, like, as much as you might think he's a better winger, the idea that Nuge can also play center so well, I think I'd still take Nuge over him. I'd take Nuge over Jaden Schwartz. I'd take him over Kyle Palmieri as well. So there, he would be the best winger, save Alex Ovechkin, who we know is just going to re-up in Washington. Nuge is probably the best winger on the market next year.
And I would also lock him up. I would also be shocked if Colorado doesn't re-sign Landeskog as well. So, I mean, I just think it makes sense. Does anybody think it doesn't get done?
I think they'll get it done. The fact that we're hearing about positive strides in the negotiation happening already, I think that means we're getting it. It'll get done.
I was actually a little bit surprised that, obviously I was super pumped. Rick tweeted me yesterday asking if I had saw it first thing in the morning, but like, I was actually a little bit surprised that they've already gotten started on it. I didn't think that they would start talking until in season next year, but I'm super pumped that they're already going. And to me, that just means like both sides want to get this done.
Yep. And I think for the Oilers, they want that cost certainty as quickly as they can, right? And that's a big part of it too. You don't want to be going through the next, you know, month or so of the season, potentially bringing in long-term solutions to your roster and going, oh boy, but I hope this Nugent Hopkins thing doesn't cost us $1 million more than we think it will.
And same with from Nugent Hopkins' perspective as well. Like having this done now would give him, you know, the stability and the rest of his career without having to worry about it in a contract year or whatever it is. And I know there are people, I've read it all over on Twitter, I was reading on The Nation yesterday, people that think that they shouldn't sign him until after the expansion draft. Well, that just doesn't make any sense. Why would from an Oilers perspective, yeah, that would be fucking rad. But like from player's perspective, why would he ever do that? Why would he just be like, okay, yeah, no problem. We'll just, you know, I'll just wait here and we'll have a handshake hoping that it gets done. Like, you know, this is a contact sport that they play.
Yeah.
You never know what's going to happen. Why would he ever do that?
Yeah. And I mean, if you were to get hurt or whatever, or have a bad year, I'm sure that quote unquote handshake agreement would be crumpled up and thrown right out. And the other way around, if the Oilers and Nugent Hopkins said, okay, let's just wait till after the expansion draft to sign a deal or anything like that, and Nugent Hopkins went and scored like 100 points next year, do you not think he's going to sit there and go, you know, someone else is probably going to give me 9, so I'm out of here. Probably. Yeah, it's exactly. A business.
Exactly. So I was super pumped about it. I can't wait for this to actually get done. Although the problem, and I tweeted it yesterday, I've said it on this podcast, I don't know, real life, the day he signs his extension, I have to order 3 new Nuge jerseys, and that's going to cost me a pretty penny. So if you want to subscribe to my OnlyFans, I would appreciate it. Or I'll just take cash donations. I will sell you pictures of my feet. Tyler buys them once a week. They are wonderful.
Nope.
Changing gears. This has been a very busy Oilers week. Yeah. Bad news, though, this time around. Oscar Klefbom. This is a tricky situation. It is reported that he needs surgery, may miss an extended period, if not the whole season. We're going to get into Tom and Dusty talked about it a little bit more. But
did you say he needs surgery? Or he may need surgery.
He may opt for surgery, I think is the right way to phrase it.
Yes, thank you. That's what I think it is.
So what I would say, but like, to me, doesn't that kind of imply that you need surgery?
Yeah, that's exactly it. So either you're going to delay it or you're getting it. Mm-hmm. It's not an if, it's a when.
We went through this with him, a couple of years ago when Larson said something about him not playing, right? I think he's just getting it. I think it's, you know, his shoulder's bugging him. I don't know how bad it is. Obviously, it's really hard for us to tell. I don't think he, you know, it was reported that he didn't really want to come back and play in the play-ins, you know, for whatever reason. So maybe they're just, you know, some of that, for lack of a better term, heart or drive just wasn't quite there for him. So maybe that's where a little bit of a gap of his game was. You know, he just feels like maybe the shoulder played a bigger part. And once we get going here, you know, you kind of get over those things.
But I mean, I understand the positivity, and you want to hope for the best. But the reality is if surgery is on the table, there's an injury enough there that it's yes, you can play through it. Yes, you can play through it.
Two words.
You're looking at possible re-aggravation.
Chicken wing.
Connor McDavid.
Okay.
He had surgery. Right. He had surgery right there, and chose to go a different route. Right.
Yeah, but I mean, that's what I'm saying is if they're looking, it's not like, oh, Klefbom is banged up and, you know, he's nursing some injuries. It's we're looking at possibly having surgery done or if it's something that we can stretch out for a while. But, like, I don't know. To me, it's just another brick in the fucking wall for Ken Holland to have to deal with this offseason. But it's, you know, it's just as frustrating as anything else. But I think that it is a concern going forward, because if he does play through it, again, you know, you're looking at injuries that are just piling up, and then all of a sudden we're without Oscar Clefbaum middle of the season, and we have to make a panic move instead of a plan.
It may actually not be anything either, though, right? Like, if his shoulder's bugging him, maybe it's not something that needs surgery. Maybe it's something that needs this, that, or the other thing.
I don't know.
We don't know what it is. I don't know. I don't think surgery is as close to reality as people make it sound. I just feel like it's a little bit of that telephone game where it kind of goes through one set of ears and one set of another set of ears and comes out a little more skewed than it actually is. I think that's where we are. Now, maybe that's just a little bit of me being naive and being overly optimistic.
No, you're optimistic. Things. That's not naive.
Well, whatever. You're optimistic. Same thing. Yeah, maybe I'm just being a little more optimistic, but I don't know. I just don't think it's quite at the, because if it was surgery, they would have jumped on something by now. We would have heard about something. They would have done something.
But if season starts today, we have Larson and Clefbaum, both are question marks, right? So like that's top two defensemen, top three defensemen, depending on the conversation you're having with person. That are question marks already to start the season. And I don't think we envision that changing much before a possible December start date or a January start date. So that's where it's a scary thing.
Go ahead, Tyler.
I know you're being optimistic, but like if you listen to Tom and Dusty talk about it on the oil stream, they weren't saying the word retirement, obviously, because I don't think anyone's willing to go there yet. But you tie in the fact that his shoulder's been bugging him for a while. He's always had shoulder issues. Tie in the fact that it's believed they had to, you know, maybe not beg him to come back, but they had to convince him pretty hard to come back to the bubble. I think this is a guy who, like what we saw with Dustin Byfuglien, I know there's a big age gap here, but like what we saw with Dustin Byfuglien, sort of goes, man, I think I'm losing my love of coming to play this game, fucking up my shoulder, rehabbing it, coming back, fucking up my shoulder, rehabbing it. You said if there's surgery, we would have heard something, they would have done something already. I think what's happening is he's sitting there going, I have to have another fucking surgery on my shoulder. I'm not sure if I want to do this, rehab it just to come back and fuck up my shoulder again. I just think it's, I don't know if I'm speaking out of place here, but I wouldn't be surprised if these nagging shoulder injuries are just kind of killing his love of the game a little bit. That's at least what I'm picking out of the 10 reports now we've gotten from different guys. And it sucks because, I mean, he's their best defenseman when he's healthy. But, like, I don't blame a guy for sitting there having to rehab all these injuries and at one point just going, maybe I just want to take a year off. Maybe I just want to sit for a year, decide in 4 months if I want the surgery or not, and I'll be back next season.
It's tough, too, right? Because, like, I mean, if he is thinking that way, like, I know Dusty and Tom danced around retirement, but if he is thinking that way, this is a guy who's, you know, he just turned 27. He's already got $22 million U.S. career earnings, according to Puckpedia.com. And maybe, like Tyler says, he's fucking over it. It's interesting because lately, and I know NFL, NHL, obviously different, but like it reminds me of players shutting it down way earlier than you think they would because they're looking ahead at what their life is going to look like in the future. Maybe Oscar Clefbaum, again, we're just speculating. Nobody knows jack shit. We're just having fun here. Well, not fun, but you know what I'm talking about. But maybe he's looking at the next 50 years of his life and saying, do I want to be able to lift my arm over my head?
Yeah.
I don't know. It sucks, though. And like Dan said, this is something Ken Holland did not need this offseason. Definitely makes a lot more sense about the OEL rumors that were going around this past week. And we're going to talk about some of those as well. But I just want to finish this off by saying the connection to OEL made a lot of sense. Tyler, yesterday came out, no EL, as you phrased it in the real life tweets.
Yeah, no Oliver Ekman-Larsson. Apparently, he only put Vancouver and Boston on his list. People were getting, there's a bunch of different ways we could go with this. First, I think I personally have the belief it's a little bit of a blessing. When you look at what the Oilers were rumored
fucking
to going,
great blessing.
Yeah, when you look at what the Oilers were rumored to going to have to give up in a deal, like Bouchard and the first this year for Ekman-Larsson, who has a huge contract, I was not a fan of making that move. I wasn't totally against it, but I didn't think it was a great trade by any means. But now you hear that Vancouver might have to give up like next year's first and Ollie Ulevi. Like, are you kidding me? That's not even in the same stratosphere as Bouchard in this year's first. So I think it's a bit of a bullet dodge. Some people are, you know, doing the whole, oh, how come no one ever wants to come play in Edmonton? We have the two best players in the league and still no one wants to come play in our city. I don't even read too much into that. I think Ekman-Larsson is, you know, he spent his entire career in Arizona already. You can see why a guy would love to play in Vancouver. Duh, it's a gorgeous city. You can see why a guy would want to go to Boston because they have a great team going there right now. So I'm not even too upset about, like, him saying no to Edmonton. To me, it's just like, whatever, the guy didn't want to come here. He also didn't want to come to 28 other cities around the league. So
the point I wanted to get to is like, okay, he said no to Edmonton, but he also said no to everyone else outside of Boston and Vancouver. Like,
well, and how can that guy do that? He's the guy backed the Brinks truck up, loaded it up, and now he's like, hey, I want out, and if I'm out, I want to go to these two spots.
Well, he never asked out. The Coyotes want to get out from under that contract, and he's saying, well,
the reality.
I think the reality is the Coyotes' new owner doesn't want to pay him $56 million over the next 8 years.
But he signed that contract. He knew the team that he was with. Like, it wasn't like it's a, you know, again, you can't fault a player for taking that money. But at the same time, it's like, well, what are you doing if you're less than two teams and that's it? Like, I don't blame him at all.
I get it.
If the Coyotes signed him to that deal, he signed it thinking he was going to stay in the desert for his entire career. And now a year later, the Coyotes are going, fuck, we have no money or we're running low on money. We want to get some money out the door. And we aren't too sold on this contract anymore. And he's probably sitting there going, what the fuck are you guys doing? You just gave me all this money. So I don't blame him at all. I think I would list one team. Fuck. I would say, you know what? You come when a team makes an offer and I'll tell you yes or no.
I think to Dan's point, like if it was OEL that requested the trade, which I don't think that's the case. I think it was Arizona. I think that no trade clauses should be waived.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But like this one, I agree with Tyler. I got to say, it's just like, they just signed him to this deal and now he's kind of looking at me like, well, what the fuck? Well, I'm going to pick where I go. It kind of reminds me of a different situation entirely because he asked for the trade. Remember when Marty St. Louis asked for the trade out of Tampa and he only said the New York Rangers?
Yeah.
And it's just like, Eisenman was just supposed to be like, well, what am I supposed to do here? So it's going to be interesting. I think this is a blessing. I want to talk about a different defenseman that has reportedly come up on the rumor mill. That I would be way more interested in sending a larger package over. But first, I want to talk about our new friends that are our draft day sponsor at Prime Staffing.
New friends.
They are our draft content sponsor here at The Nation for the next couple of weeks. So we're going to discuss some draft profiles here. Prime Staffing is matching quality work with quality workers. They provide certified personnel with 24/7 dispatch for flexible deployment. Find quality work. Quality workers, whether temporary, part-time, or full-time, learn more about Prime Staffing on their website, which is primestaffing.ca, or follow them on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Gentlemen, the NHL draft, it's very, very weird this year. I'm still like, my timelines are all fucked up. It's weird that the draft is on Tuesday. We haven't really talked
about it. We're into it, man. We're into the next season already. Let's go. We've had enough time off.
Absolutely. So I'm pumped about it, but I want to look at five guys specifically that may fall within the Oilers' range at 14, provided that they stick in that slot. Tyler, I'm going to start with Seth Jarvis. You wrote about him. He had 42 goals, 56 assists, 98 points for the Portland Winterhawks this year. He's 5'10 center, right-handed. A lot to like about this player. What's your vibe on him?
There is a lot to like about Seth Jarvis, the Winnipeg native, so I have a sneaking suspicion, as do a lot of guys who put together mock drafts. I have a feeling he's not going to make it past the Winnipeg Jets at 10th overall. I think they could look at that and go, if we're trading line A now, we probably want to put a natural goal scorer right back in our system. So I feel like Jarvis is probably going to go before the Oilers have a chance to step up to the draft stage or, you know, turn on their mic on the draft Zoom, whatever we're doing this year. But if Jarvis somehow falls to a man, natural goal scorer, elite abilities, he's got that flair. His game, he's dynamic. That's the word I'm looking for here. His shot, his skating, everything, his playmaking. He would be, in my opinion, a top six goal scoring winger within two, three seasons. So if he falls to the Oilers, they should be all over Jarvis.
It's one of those things where, you know, we talked about this a couple weeks ago because the next one I want to talk about is Yaroslav Askarov. But it's one of those things where obviously you take the best player available. That's the jam. And the guys that we're looking at right now are all forwards outside of Askarov. So having a guy who could pump in some goals, that would be very nice, which brings me to my next candidate, Jack Quinn, right winger, 52 goals for the Ottawa 67s last year, kind of erupted out of nowhere a little bit. He could be in there. He's actually who I believe Craig Button had the Oilers taking in his mock draft at TSN. Again, a goal scorer. He is a winger, obviously, and that's something that the Oilers desperately need. What do you, Dan or Rick, what are you guys thinking about maybe a Jack Quinn guy? He's pumping goals for Ottawa, but maybe it was one of those seasons where, whoa, where did this guy come from?
Well, he's only one of seven OHL players who have ever scored 50 goals in their NHL draft year since the 2000s. So that's pretty prestigious kind of level there. I mean, yeah, it's one of those things, like you said, if we're not looking at a goalie, the options for scoring from the forwards should be there at 14. It's pretty exciting to see that. Jack Quinn would be one of those guys.
Rick, what are you thinking? Do you like the idea of drafting a forward at 14? Somebody that can fill in that a little bit?
100%, man. I think that's exactly what we need to do. And, you know, I'm not going to sit here and try and lie to anybody and say, I know this and so much about these guys coming up. You know, I kind of get the chance to read what I can on the internet and it's about it and see whatever you get to see. But, you know, when they say he's a dynamic skater, you know, that's perfect. I see what you need someone like that to be able to hang out with Connor. And he's got that goal scoring abilities. And dude, this is the type of player you need out there. This is what we wanted for Connor. See how fast we can get him into town.
And that's kind of the thing too with the draft, right? Is to me, especially now in the NHL these days, forwards tend to make the show a little bit more quickly than anybody else. And I think with the caliber of forwards that are kind of sitting around where the Oilers may slot in, that could be an option. My next one that I want to look at is Connor Zeri, center, left-handed center, 38 goals, 48 assists, 86 points for the Kamloops Blazers this past season. Our friends at Elite Prospect says it's Zeri shot that leads the way. He's a deceptive trigger man, one with excellent shot placement, a deceptive release, and the ability to fire two-touch missiles on a moment's notice. His ability to collect difficult passes is a real difference maker. He doesn't often break stride to receive passes either, maintaining the pace of his team's attack. That sounds like a player who would look pretty good with another Connor that's on this team.
Yeah, and today Tyler Wright, who's one of the Oilers' directors of scouting, was on with Stoff, and he said something along the lines of, we have a list of guys we like at 14, we have a list of guys we have in case we trade up, and a list of guys in case we trade down. To me, Zeri is the option where you maybe trade down five or six slots, you pick up a third-round pick in the process, and then you go take Connor Zeri. But I agree, the fact that scouts are raving about his shot so much makes me really interested in him. I believe he played a lot of center in Kamloops. I watched him a couple of times throughout the year. They rolled through and played when they would play the Oil Kings. So I'd be interested in Zeri. I think it's a move down candidate though, but that shot, you're right, it'd be tempting to see him next to Connor McDavid in a few seasons.
Another move down candidate a little bit from what I'm reading could be Dylan Holloway, played for the University of Wisconsin. This one's tricky to me. Maybe Tyler, you got a better idea, but like when you're picking somebody out of the Big Ten, it's hard to tell what you got. Obviously, none of us are scouts. The stats aren't exactly sexy. He had 8 goals, 9 assists, 17 points for the University of Wisconsin. But at the same point, that doesn't necessarily mean too much because he may not have been getting much playing time ahead of seniors and people ahead of him, right? Again, going back to EP, Holloway consistently applies pressure on the back check, pickpockets, puck carriers, makes timely hits, wields a disruptive stick, you name it. He never flees the zone early and he's capable east-west attacker who shields the puck from opposing defenders very well. So he sounds like a little bit of a road dog there. What do you make of having somebody who, you know, is projected to go in the first round? He's 19, he's a little bit older. Mm-hmm. But maybe the stats aren't as sexy as something that you would be used to from a first round pick.
Yeah, like I watched him. He was with the Okotoks Oilers in the AJHL. I watch a lot of AJHL hockey. This is not the Dylan Holloway I saw in the AJHL. The Dylan Holloway in the AJHL was, you know, scoring 2 points a game and quite frankly running the show for Okotoks. He did score, I think, 5 goals in his last 10 games. So he started to get hot towards the end of the year with Wisconsin. But I don't necessarily... out of the names we've talked about, he's the furthest thing from being a goal-scoring top six winger. To me, he's either going to be a top six winger who's the defensive conscience of a line, or he's going to be a really good third-line center for a team. So for that reason, I have him below Jack Quinn. I have him below Seth Jarvis easily. Him and Zari are more in that range. I think Holloway probably goes ahead of Zari, but for what the Oilers want and what the Oilers need, as much as I'd love to see him pick a good AJHL boy, I think I have Zari ahead of Holloway.
Lastly, and this is the one where we're probably going to debate a little bit, who knows if he's actually going to be there at number 14, but Yaroslav Askarov is the guy everyone's talking about. He's the next Vasilevsky, according to people that have watched him play. Again, back to EP. What really makes him stand out is the way he utilizes a range of depth management to effectively make the most of his wide stance and fluid movements. He has incredible reaction speed and does a good job of controlling himself within the blue paint when he needs to. He's difficult to pull out of position by holding sustained pressure on his team's end of the ice. He could be elite. Could be, is the question when it comes to drafting a goalie that high. Tyler, you were open to it.
Yeah, and here's what I'll say. I think only one of Jarvis, Quinn, or Askarov are going to be there at 14. There's a chance none of them are, but I think only one of them, if any, are going to be available in that spot. I take Yaroslav Askarov if he's there. I don't think he's going to be there. So for me, I'm not even paying too much attention to him anymore. I think he's going in that 10, 11, 12 range, maybe even sooner, as we've heard some teams, you know, might be inclined to take a top 10 pick and scoop him up since he has that elite potential. So for the Oilers, I think the focus and the talk should be around which scoring winger. I think it's going to be Jack Quinn. I don't think Askarov's even going to be there.
What if he is and either Jarvis or Quinn are there?
Let's just
say they're both there somehow. Who are you picking? Are you taking one of the four or are you taking a goalie?
Man, if the goalie's still there, there's a part of me that wonders if a team would be really itching to trade up to 14 to take him, and then I might trade down and just take Connor Zari. But if I had to pick between Askarov or Quinn,
yeah,
I think I would take Askarov. The elite potential is just too much for me to ignore. I think you're taking a huge risk, but I think there would be a chance that in 5, 6, 7 years, Askarov's a Vezina candidate. I can't see a scenario where Jack Quinn's one of the best goal scorers in the league. So I think I go with Askarov.
This is the gambler in you, Tyler.
And Jarvis.
It is, man. It's the gambler in me. But like, we just saw it with Tampa Bay. Like, can you imagine this team if they had a Carter Hart-esque goaltender between the pipes? Like, it's franchise changing.
Exactly,
and I don't think Jack Quinn's franchise changing.
That's the thing right there. It's, you nailed it on the head, Tyler. If you draft Askarov, if he's in that position, again, I'm with you. I don't think that he's going to fall to 14. But you have the opportunity to just not have to worry about goalie for 4 or 5 years. You don't even have to think about, you know, the next time an Askarov comes around to your pick. You don't even have to look at it because you have a guy in your system that has, we just haven't had it. Like, what's the last time we had a top prospect goaltender that we were just like, okay, you know, 3 years out, we're gonna be just fine for goalies. It just doesn't happen. So like when you can look at your organizational needs and just absolutely cross off goalie as a thing that you need anymore, I don't see how you don't make that pick.
Well, you can cross off pretty much top six forwards, and if you pick up one of those kids too, though, right?
Well, but that's but like you need multiple.
You're gonna have
you're gonna have Leon, you're gonna have Connor, you're gonna have Nuge,
you're gonna have Yam. Then you're gonna, let's call one of these kids, whichever one, you know, Jarvis or Quinn. That's 5 out of 6. And at that point, you know,
no man, this team needs more wingers all the time.
Fair enough.
Your system needs to be fed with that stuff. So that's what you use the rest of your picks to try and fill, to try and find those diamonds in the rough in the second, well, not the second round, obviously, but like later on in the draft and in other drafts. If you have Askarov, next year you're not thinking about a goalie in your first round pick.
And I think if you had to go right now and enter the free agent market or the trade market, and your options were, I need to find a winger who can score 20 to 30 with Connor McDavid or a bona fide starting goaltender, you know you'd have an easier time finding the winger than the bona fide starting goaltender.
Well, you're paying $7 million for
it. Or it's that too, right? Like, you can go get Markstrom, but he's going to cost you $7.5 million a season, and that's very tough to do. The opportunity to not only draft Askarov and potentially one day have that starting goaltender, but to, like, I'm going way down the road here, but you play it right after his ELC, you give him a nice long-term deal for like $6 million a season, and your stud goalie is under contract for, you know, close to a decade on a good contract. Like, the opportunity to do that here, like I said, it's franchise changing. And as much as I love Jarvis and I love Jack Quinn, and I think they will be impact top six scorers, they're not franchise changers.
I mean, like, to be honest, I've warmed up a lot to the idea of drafting Askarov, provided he is there. You know, I've been hurt before in the NHL draft, so I just assume it's not going to be an option. I think he's probably going to go.
He's gone.
We need to go forward here. I think we need that.
I don't think we have an option. That's the thing. We can't hover over that at all, right? Because
we have the goalie in Russia right now.
Connor Vallov is not on that level. That would be
He may not be on that level right now. He may never even get to that level. But if you had a second level goalie. And an incredible top six offense. I think you're just fine there.
You
pencil in a blue chip prospect there, and then all of a sudden, whether Konilov turns out to be or not, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter at that point, and he's a trade chip.
You can sit there and say, "Oh, we have Konovalov, so we don't need Askarov." I'll sit there and say, "We have Lavoie, so we don't need Jack Quinn." Like, that's what the comparison is.
No, and that's fair there, but I mean, you're going to need a lot more forwards than you goaltenders.
The good news is
you need goalie
that
more, though, than you need a winger right now.
This franchise desperately needs a goaltender. And, you know, degenerate Bagmilk starting to get that itch on the gamble, you know what I mean? If he's there, you kind of want it, you know? But the good news is today is Friday afternoon as we record this. We are only a few days away from finding out. First round of the NHL draft is happening on Tuesday. We will have plenty more draft coverage going through the weekend and into the early week, as well as I'll be running a live blog on Tuesday just to get everybody chatting, everybody talking. It's going to be interesting. I think before we move away from the draft, boys, do you think it's going to be more busier than normal in terms of player trades and activity? I think that this is going to be one of the more interesting drafts to watch in terms of actual trades happening.
Well, how bad did the NHL screw this one up that they didn't just put all the GMs in quarantine together for 2 weeks and then run a draft in person and, like, make them have to deal with each other for 2 weeks? Like, the deals would have been amazing. They talk on the phone anyways.
You just put them on the ice and you give them
turn
like
it into
some
a reality show. Put some cameras in the rooms.
Yeah, you know what you put, like,
they can't make a deal face to face. They can't. Cubicles. They have to look at each other through a wall. So you got Love is Blind there.
Cubicles.
I don't know. Like, it was just, like, I'd love to see the draft. I know it's going to be a Zoom draft. But
make them sleep in bunks. Like, four GMs a room.
I love to see
Big Brothers. Exactly. You got the have-not room. There's GMs that are in and out. Like, oh, the NHL, call us. We got some marketing ideas.
The NHL needs our ideas. Dan, I love this idea. They should have locked all the GMs in a room or some hotel somewhere. That would have been hilarious.
Then we could have had an actual draft, too. You could have had the Brian Burke telling Brian Murray that he's taking Kadri because he wanted him kind of moments. Like, it would have been amazing.
But back to the question, do you guys think it's going to be busier than normal in terms of player movement? I personally do.
The offseason, though, yeah. And it'll definitely feel that way, too, because it's going to be more condensed. So it's going to happen a lot more. All at once rather than spread out over time.
I've been hurt too many times with that talk. The year before the expansion draft, it was like, oh man, every team is worried about that expansion draft. More big players will be moved than ever before. And then it was the expansion draft year and everyone's like, oh man, get ready. This expansion draft, it's the big one. There's going to be star players going left, right, and then nothing really happened. And now we get this year, and I know, you know, haven't seen a global pandemic in quite some time, so maybe this is finally the offseason where
not since the draft after the Spanish flu.
Yeah. So maybe this is the offseason where we see some big names go, but Frank Saravalli talked about this on Thursday on the Lowdown, and he kind of said, like, you know, there are GMs who say you won't believe the amount of franchise-altering players who are being talked about right now. It's crazy. Never seen anything like it. But Frank kind of went, and he didn't say this exactly, but he was kind of like, you know, teams don't have a lot of money, though. Money has to move in order for star players to move. And do teams have the ability to, like, you might sit there and go, man, we want all, like, the Canucks. We want Oliver Ekman-Larsson. We want him real bad, but we can't make the money work. And that's going to kill it. And I'm hopeful that we're going to see a lot of movement because I love that shit. I live for it. But I'm worried that the money and the flat cap is just going to be, it's just going to stop it.
that's my prediction, is that day two of the draft, I'm assuming they're still doing a day two of the draft, you know, rounds 2 to 6, I think you're going to, that's when you're going to see some moves happen where it's money for picks. And it's just going to be the, it's going to be the transactional kind of moves where teams are going to move up in the draft because they're taking on Chris Russell's contract or whatever have you, like that kind of stuff. Cause I mean, like you hear today, I don't remember who I read it from, but the Jim Benning has called literally every team trying to move money around. Like, I think that you're going to see some ticky tacky kind of money strategy moves on the second day of the draft.
Dan, my money strategy move on a Friday afternoon is to head on over to skipthedishes.ca and order myself something to eat. I'm eyeballing this 1 pound roast beef and cheddar from Arby's. And if I put in an order over $20, that is free delivery to your friend Bag Milk. And that is all courtesy of skipthedishes.ca. And I will tip my driver and I will enjoy my 1 pound roast beef and cheddar. Tyler, you're shaking your head at me. I don't appreciate you denying my love of roast beef and cheddar, especially from our friends at Skip the Dishes, considering they want to bring it right to my door and I don't even have to put pants on if I don't want to.
I ordered Arby's from Skip yesterday.
See?
Wasn't even thinking of that. But yes, I did.
About a year ago or so, we were campaigning to get Arby's on Skip the Dishes. Mm-hmm. They are now there. And that's why we go to skipthedishes.ca. We don't have to leave. And we get something delicious to eat. Costco hot dogs, you're up next. Bring them in.
Yeah.
Before we started talking draft, I did want to talk about a rumor that's coming up on the internet today. I don't know why, but I like it. Sergachev from Tampa Bay is quote-unquote available, question mark? Well, we were talking about making a trade package for OEL. This is a guy that I would legitimately put a trade package together for.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
He's young, can grow with the team. He's an offensive-minded defenseman. Just got a fresh cup ring that's going to be going on his finger. He would look mighty fine filling in on the Oilers' blue line. Tyler, I saw your tweet. You would trade the first-round pick this year if it meant bringing in Sergachev, yes?
Yeah, I would trade 14. Like, again, the big asterisk here is going to be on what you think the contract would look like for Sergachev. But and you have to get rid of Russell because you got to be able to afford to sign Sergachev after.
Yep.
So those two dominoes, if they fall, if you can make the money work, I trade 14 and Bouchard for Mikhail Sergachev. I just think proven himself now. You can get him locked up. He can do a ton for you, and he can grow with the team. It's a no-brainer.
But Bouch over Broberg?
Well, so the reason that's a tough decision for me, and weird, like this comes back to Klefbom in a way, because on the left side, you have Nurse and you have Klefbom. On the right side right now, you have Bear coming up. Jones can play either side, probably better on the right side. And Sergachev's a lefty. So maybe I would prefer to move. Yeah, maybe I would prefer to move Broberg in that deal. Broberg might have better trade value too.
And I just think that like the Oilers are stocked more so on the HD side than they are on the right-hand side. So I would be really, really hesitant about moving Bouchard. He was like ripping up the AHL in terms of points last year, and that one would make me very nervous.
Yeah. And
But I mean, if you bring in a player of Sergachev's caliber, I mean, like, I don't think any of us are dying if it's Broberg or Bouchard at all. Myself.
No.
It's only one of those things where the hindsight would make you second guess it, right? It's maybe the guy who traded turned into, you know, whatever, he's better than Sergachev, and maybe one day we'd sit there and look back and go, oh, shit. But I think going forward, we'd probably win that trade for a couple of years at the very least.
I wonder what Tampa Bay would want for him, because is Tampa in a spot, considering their salary cap, where maybe they would want quantity over quality in a way? Like, if Edmonton...
Yeah, they couldn't bring back a big deal.
They couldn't bring back a big deal, but like, if you went, hey, we could give you Broberg and 14, or would you be interested in Caleb Jones and Jesse Puljujärvi, who I believe had interest in Puljujärvi when the Oilers were first looking at moving him, could sit there and go, you know what, that's a skill guy. Maybe we put him with a good center on our third line and that works. And then maybe they look at Jones and go, 2 more years at 800K for a guy who's already good enough to play in our top six. Sign us up for that too, right? Like, you got to remember, they're going to be looking to repeat and they're going to be looking to save money. So in that sense, like, maybe there's a deal for him where you don't have to give up one of your big two blue chip prospects.
I mean, it's going to be interesting. The fact that he's even reportedly available,
yeah,
I find to be super interesting. Very, very good defenseman. That was, I mean, in the Puljujärvi draft, I remember a lot of people talking about how the Oilers should pick him up with the fourth overall pick.
They wanted to. That was their plan before Columbus went off the board.
So,
give it Columbus.
Maybe it's time to right a wrong here. Maybe it's time to bring in our defenseman that would, you know, he would put up some points on the back end and he would offer a flavor that the Oilers just don't have back there.
Yet.
Yeah.
We'll see. You mentioned Jesse Puljujärvi. Looks like that deal is going to happen sooner than later. Maybe with a max looking like a $1.5 million contract. Anybody think that's too much, not enough? What are you guys thinking about Jesse?
No, I think that's pretty much right where you can expect him to be signing. I still would try to get him to a 2 just to maybe take some of the stress off, but 1.2, 1.5, that's pretty much where I thought he was going to get it.
Dan?
Yeah, I think that 1.5 was kind of the ceiling for me. So, I mean, that's pretty much what you can hope for. Obviously, the guy's not going to come back and play for peanuts, so you understand it. But, I mean, 1 year is good too, right? Give him a chance to show his stuff and show his commitment to the NHL and hopefully we have a hell of a winger.
To me, the funny thing is just that we're still talking about this. Yeah. It's been going on forever. I remember we were doing this podcast probably like 6 or 7 months ago, and Tyler's just like, I don't want to talk about Jesse Puljujärvi. Here we are.
We named it the No Jesse Puljujärvi episode.
But here we are. Another thing of note, again, Frank Saravalli, he's basically generating all our content these days. Oilers have a little bit of interest in Peter Mrazek as a plan B. Or no, this is Pierre LeBrun said this. Oilers have interest in Peter Mrazek as a plan B, provided that they can't find a bigger upgrade elsewhere. Makes sense. Holland's familiar with Mrazek from his time in Detroit. I got to say, though, and tell me if I'm wrong, landing with Peter Mrazek with all of the goaltenders that are available right now would almost be disappointing to me.
I don't think he's plan A, though. Like, I don't think Mrazek's plan A. He's a guy, one more year, $3.2 million. I think there's a situation where you're either getting the Hurricanes to take a contract back, or you might even be able to get them to keep like $1 million of this thing, and you're probably getting him for cheap. He's probably not costing you more than a draft pick. And he didn't have a great year in 1920, 269 goals against, 905 save percentage. But in 2018-2019, 2.39 goals against and a 914 save percentage. I like him. I do. He's not plan A. I'd like to see them swing a little bit bigger, maybe get a guy who can grow with this team a little bit more and has a bit more upside is how I should say it. But hey, Mrazek's 34. Holland's familiar with him. I think he wouldn't cost a lot salary or acquisition-wise. I don't hate it.
I don't hate it. It's just like I feel like I don't know if there's going to be a better opportunity to find a goaltender than this year. So I don't know. Like you said, it's a plan B option. You circle back on Mrazek, but like I just can't help but feel like, man, it'd be great to see the Oilers get a goaltender who could be here for a while, not necessarily a stopgap, especially when there's so many good ones available. When's the next time this is going to happen in terms of just quality of goaltending that is out there? I'm not saying go to sign Markstrom for 7 or whatever he's going to get. That's too much money. But like, I don't know. I still can't take my mind off the Columbus Blue Jackets. They need to trade one of those guys.
Yep.
The expansion draft's coming up and you're going to lose one for free otherwise.
Yeah, that's it. That's my number one goal, I think, is to try and figure out how to get one of those guys over there. Mrazek does. I don't know what feels like a plan B. I feel like that should be like a plan, you know, way down the list there. I get it. If you can't get one of these 4 or 5 guys, then you got to move to plan B, and that's, you know, the secondary stopgap kind of guys. And I don't even know if he's in the top rank of the stopgap guys either. But yeah, he is a quality goaltender. Not a great year last year, apparently. But I think for me, I'm holding my breath on a bigger, better name, perhaps a higher ceiling type of a situation.
Dan, wrap this up on Mrazek.
There we go. Figuring out the mute button for the first time. I don't know if he's necessarily the sexiest name out there, but you're not upset if that's your tandem of Koskinen and Mrazek. It's, you know, I put him before Smith, and Smith to me is option number C. So Or not option number Z.
He feels like a safe play. Like, I think Mrazek is just putting it in the middle of the fairway. You're not doing anything too crazy. He's probably going to be able to give you 35, 40 honest starts next year. I don't hate it.
Makes a lot more sense, too, if, like, again, we're going back to our draft talk. If the Oilers can land a Askarov, then all of a sudden stopgap goaltending makes a little bit more sense while they wait for the goaltender of the future. Again, provided he's there, don't think he will be, but whatever. Another thing, housekeeping. We got our first look at what next season may look like. This time it was Frank Saravalli. He said the hybrid bubble concept would include a rotation of 2 weeks in the bubble, followed by 1 week at home where players can regroup with their families, then rotating back for another 2 weeks, and so on. The thinking is that each team would be able to play approximately 12 games per month, which is doable given that there would be no travel between games other than flying in and out of the hub city. Also talked about something I've been pumping on this podcast for a while now, a potential all-Canadian division, because we don't know what's going on with the border. What does everybody think about this kind of Fort Mac camp style bubble concept that the NHL is kind of playing with in terms of an option for next season?
What exactly is it? How many bubbles have we got?
Probably like
playing like Edmonton and Toronto.
Four would be the number that would make sense.
Yeah, it looks like four.
So you'd fly into your bubble for 2 weeks, play a bunch of games, fly out for a week, fly it, and then, you know, keep doing that all year?
Yep.
And now you guys travel. Do you stay in the same bubble? Like,
no, I think you'd go home and then potentially go back to a new bubble.
Yeah.
Or like they'd mix up the teams, right? So like the West, it'd probably be like, hey, you play in your division once, then there's like a hybrid bubble, and then probably another week of hybrid bubble, but still in your conference, and like once where you go to a different division in the East. And you just work a cycle around it like that.
Would that not make you can't like cycle the teams though, right? Because wouldn't that not make you like a week off TV? Like, is there a way to
stagger these East and West maybe? And you say you don't play a team in the other conference all year? That'd work.
Yeah, I mean, that's what the QMJHL is doing. They've returned with six divisions that are. Or not six divisions. Yeah, I guess it is six divisions with six teams in each division, and they're just playing each other for the entire season. So that kind of minimizes it. I guess I just don't get the idea of 2 weeks in the bubble and then a week out. Like, the whole idea of the bubble, I thought, was to avoid extra infection. So why are they?
I think
because the biggest complaint about the bubble was being stuck in the bubble. So they want. I don't think they actually want to do bubbles. This is just like, if we have to do the bubbles, what's the best way they want to get out and go back home and stuff?
Well, because we talked about it at the start of the NFL season, where we said, you know, the NFL is going to be a good test for this kind of setup. And we're now in week four, correct? Yes, week four. And we have our first postponements of games due to COVID.
That's not bad though. I'm not taking that as a huge.
Well, but that's my thing. Is it's like, why are we? I don't know. I guess for me, it's like, why are we risking these guys possibly their futures?
Because they're got to get out there and start making money again as a business.
But I guess my thing with the bubble is, why don't you just have the bubble be 3 weeks or 4 weeks at a time, and then have a week off or two with your family? Because then at least you're smashing in some games. You're lowering the risk of a spread by playing a very physical game. Like, I don't know. I heard the 2 weeks on and week off, I was just kind of mystified.
The tough part too, like when you look at the NFL and they're doing travel all over the place, but you travel once a week. With Major League Baseball, these teams are playing three, sometimes four game series. You're traveling once, maybe twice a week if you're not on a homestand. When it comes to hockey, like, you can't sit there and have these guys go in different city, different hotel every single night. Like, that's where I think the NHL is at a bit of a disadvantage when it comes to how to put forth next regular season. And I think the hybrid bubble might just have to be what they do. I know I've heard they're really against it because they feel like they need ticket revenue. They really need to get bums in the seats to make next season worth it and to get some money flowing back into the league. But the hybrid bubble might just have to work, whether it's 2 or 3 weeks at a time. Like, I don't think 3 weeks is even that bad if you're getting 10 days after to go see your family, and then it's 21 to 24 days to play hockey. You can jam 13, 14 games in 24 days in a bubble. You go home for 10 days, you know, even if the first 7 days the players aren't practicing or anything, and then you come back, it's a couple days of practice to get off to speed, and then out to the next bubble.
I think that might be the way it has to be done, considering the way the NHL schedule kind of works.
Just to finish this off, Saravalli continued on his article, says the plan would be to start the season in hybrid bubbles, then progress to teams hosting games in their home arenas and cities with limited capacity before hopefully ramping up closer to full capacity in time for the playoffs. I mean, that's a bold dream, but we'll see. The format of the 2021 season hinges largely on how the science and local health authority regulations that evolve over the next few months and the calendar turns. So the NHL clearly looking at the NFL and being like, well, how can we get some people in some buildings here too? So it's going to be interesting, man. Just like when we were trying to figure out the return to play for the actual playoffs, I think this is going to be an evolving process, very liquid and fluid, and just we're going to have to see it as it comes. I wouldn't be surprised if we hear nothing, 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 and then all of a sudden it's a Tuesday and we've got a plan in place for what the season's going to look like, and the boys are expected to fly back home like anytime soon.
Well, that's kind of what it was the last time, right? Like we had nothing, 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 and then it was Vegas and Toronto. No, Vegas and Vancouver. Vancouver, Toronto, and then it was Vancouver or Edmonton and Toronto, and that was it. It was like over 3 day span. So you're probably right.
So we'll see what happens. I mean, guessing today on Friday, October 2nd, probably doesn't make any sense because I imagine this is going to change 1,000 times before the season actually kicks off in late December, early January, whenever that happens. But we'll see. Tyler, it is time for you to get your buttons ready, my friend, because we are looking at the Oodle Noodle Hot and Cold Performers of the Week. Head on into Oodle Noodle, any of their 14 locations around the city, for a takeout or curbside pickup order, and they will be donating 10% of those orders to local charities and initiatives. This week, their charity partner is the Bissell Center. They just loaded a video about Jay checking in, doing a little bit of cooking at the Bissell Center. It is on Twitter at @Oodle_Noodle or on Instagram at @OodleNoodleGram. Check them out, get something to eat, and know that you are doing your part to help a local charity or initiative. Gentlemen, we're going to start with our veggies this week, as we always do. It is time for our Oodle Noodle Cold Performer of the Week. Mr. Nation Dan, I am looking at your roof, and I'm looking at you for your answer on your Cold Performer of the Week.
Well, thank you for letting me start, Bag Milk, because I got some stuff to say. And I'm calling out two provinces specifically, Quebec and Ontario. This week, if you haven't been following Hockey Fights on any of the social medias, Quebec's government dangled $20 million in front of the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League. And Ontario's government is talking about not letting the league, the OHL, return unless they follow Ontario's rules of no fighting and no hitting. But the Quebec League instituted a new rule this week at the behest of the Quebec government to add a 10-minute misconduct to anybody that gets a fight in a fight. And if you have three fights, you're suspended immediately. And so effectively removing fighting from the game, again, and like I said on Hockey Fights, at the tip of a barrel of a shotgun and using a pandemic to do so is trashy, in my opinion. And so Quebec and Ontario, you get my cold performer of the week, and screw you guys.
They are just fucking ass right now.
Rick, your Oodle Noodle Cold Performer of the Week.
Well, I got to say, guys, I'm in a pretty good mood. It's sunny outside. It's gorgeous. I love it. So I can't say I'm not feeling too down, too negative about anything. So I don't know. I'm having an issue coming up with a cold performer here. So I'm just going to go and take an easy reach of this one. Just say politics in general. Yeah, that shit just kind of annoys me, but for real though, there's nothing to be worried about right now. We got a good world right now.
I have two of them, so maybe I'll dip into Rick's here. I'll take Rick's.
Yeah, please, yeah, you take mine.
Yeah, I'll go. Rick, I'm not even giving you a button for that one. I'm just going
to... I don't want a button. I've been thinking, I got nothing bad to say about anybody right now.
Kyle, your Oodle Noodle Cold Performer of the Week.
I'm going to go with this one, the new Vegas jersey. It's terrible.
God damn it!
Okay, no, then I'll go with a different one. Tampa Bay Stanley Cup celebrations. There's a freaking pandemic going on, and these guys are having fans line up to drink out of the cup. Killorn goes on stage and thanks them for opening everything up so they can go party. They're, you know, hugging fans. Like, there was a point where a random fan was drinking out of the cup, and then there's a photo of Blake Coleman putting his baby in the Stanley Cup. There is a pandemic going on here, people, and I know you want to celebrate your Stanley Cup win, but holding rallies with thousands and thousands of people is just not smart. So the Tampa Bay Lightning, you get my cold performer of the week.
And since I stole it, my oodle noodle cold performer of the week is the Vegas Golden Knights new jerseys that just dropped today. They are, in my opinion, in the running for the worst jerseys in the NHL. They look like French's Dijon mustard bottles, and I don't understand it. And I get that it's Vegas and that there's casinos and there's gambling and blah, blah, blah. But, like, let's get over it. The gold thing, I don't know. It looks like piss jerseys. They look like Nashville Predators jerseys, and I hate those too, and I hate these, and I can't believe you're putting these on sale and expecting people to actually wear them in public. Vegas Golden Knights, your new jerseys, are my cold performer of the week.
What the hell is going on?
Exactly.
I do think that they will look good on the ice. I think that,
I don't.
It's one of those situations where the light, it's like when people used to shit on them for their white gloves and their gold on their gloves. Like, I think it'll look good on the ice.
They're terrible.
No point.
I'm reserving judgment.
Aren't they like gold sequins?
It's not even a black color. It's the same font that they used to have, or they have on their like original jerseys on their arm bars.
Yeah, so they look kind of. I like a design. That look kind of weird.
They're just weird to me. I dislike them.
I dislike the white gloves though.
Yeah, the white gloves kind of grown on me a little bit.
That's Sergei Fedorov in the 90s.
It's funny you say that because I was posting something on Instagram for Wings Nation the other day on Throwback Thursday, and I threw up Fedorov in those sweet white Nike skates that he used to rock all the time.
Those
were the best. I had a pair. They were the best. They weighed 9,000 pounds, though, but, you know,
everything,
they looked
good. Everything did.
Flipping the ledger, it is time for our hot performers of the week, and I'm going to start with Rick because he really mailed in the cold performer of the week. Mr. Rick, your oodle noodle hot performer of the week.
Well, in a bit of a sad way because it's over now, but I'm going to give it to the Toronto Blue Jays. We've had a real good, a surprising baseball season. You know, it didn't end the way we wanted it to. Probably would have wanted a win or two and maybe get out of this this round. But all in all, I think they had a really good season. They have a big up end, and I think everyone's excited to see that organization keep growing.
I like this right here.
Tyler, you're a Blue Jays guy. You love that too. Oh. Dan, your oodle noodle hot performer of the week, my friend.
Well, it's a bit of a retraction for me in the sense that last week I listed him as my cold performer of the week, but it's our mystery guest who did get back to me and has for now postponed. The team that he is with currently said no. So he did say that as soon as he's not under their guys, then
are you breaking some news here?
Is he not re-signing?
Is he not re-signing with the team?
No, I'm not going to say anything about that. But he did leave the door open to come on the show, so I won't pan him again.
So if anyone can figure out who we're talking about, you know he's probably not going to be with his current team next year.
Yep. Who could it be? Who could it be? Mr. Yurinchek, your oodle noodle hot performer of the week.
I didn't give Dan a button.
Yeah!
There you go. My hot performer of the week. I love having meaningful afternoon sports on the TV. I wish every league would do what baseball does. Like, I love during the NHL bubble when you'd get home. I'd get home from work because I have a job that allows me to get home from work at 12:15. I'd get home, throw on a nice hockey game, do my blogging. It was a great time. Basketball in the afternoon, loved it. There's playoff baseball on my TV right now. And as a big baseball guy, I am loving it. I think leagues should always be scheduling their games to have at least one on in the afternoon because I like sitting on my couch and watching sports while the sun is still shining outside. Meaningful afternoon sports, you get my hot performer of the week.
Cash money.
With these NHL bubbles, they may be forced to play a couple day games in there throughout the regular season.
Great.
Wouldn't that be nice?
I mean, like for all of us, that are sitting here at 2:10 on a Friday afternoon from our houses. Yeah, it's great. I would love to watch TV. My oodle noodle hot performer of the week, no surprise here, contract extension starting with my boy Ryan Nugent Hopkins. I didn't expect it to happen this soon, but I was very, very happy to see these tweets going out that they are making some forward progress. My hot performer of the week is both the Edmonton Oilers and Ryan Nugent Hopkins camp coming together to start the process on an extension that will hopefully keep Nuge forever.
Put some respect on my name.
Gentlemen, with that out of the way, this is a wrap on Oilers Nation Radio episode 106. I want to thank our friends at Sherwood Ford, the Giant, Skip the Dishes, Prime Staffing, and Oodle Noodle for making this all possible. And all of you for listening. I know I did get some DMs on Instagram asking questions for this week. I'm going to hold those over for next week. Please send me your messages. I'll read them on the podcast. Answer this week's Sherwood Ford Giant question. How much should the Oilers give to Ryan Nugent-Hopkins? Slide into my DMs or hit us up on Twitter and Instagram at ON Radio Podcast. Please keep telling your friends. Please keep listening. And please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. I have not seen any of them. Where are you? With that said, I'm Bag Milk for Tyler Remchuk, Rick, and Nation Dan. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Shout out, Damien.
Thanks for listening to Oilers Nation Radio, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts. Make sure to follow us on all of our social media to stay up to date and never miss a podcast.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.